Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. If your first car had manual windows, then you probably remember the 1980s fantasy television series Knight Rider, about a special agent and his very special talking car, Kit.
Michael, what do you think of a stunt where I could somersault end over end? It's never been done before. Or better still, how about a flaming chariot? We could set my wheels on fire and do a jump. At night, it could be quite spectacular, don't you think?
Okay, so fast forward 30-odd years, and yes, by now, cars have been talking for a while, at least to tell us the door is ajar. But other automakers are taking the idea of a smart car to a whole new level. Joining us now to talk more about the new technology in today's cars is Lawrence Ulrich. He is an auto critic for the New York Times and contributor to Popular Science, among other publications. Welcome, Lawrence.
Oh, hello. How are you?
Fine, thanks. To our listeners, I want to ask you this question and give us a call to tell us the answer. What do you think is the must-have technology in cars these days? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So I was surprised to read in a PopSci article you co-wrote in August that when J.D. Power and Associates released its annual customer satisfaction survey in June, the issue that most irked American car buyers was unsatisfactory voice recognition. It's like, seriously?
It might sound strange, and also I like starting off with David Hasselhoff there. That was a nice
you remember, touch. Right?
Yes, unfortunately. And because voice recognition, it's one of those interfaces, you know, it can really make you want to tear your hair out, you know, kind of reach in through that screen and drag out whoever that disembodied voice is behind mm-hmm. there that's not following your commands, basically.
Yeah, with the Bluetooth, I'm still working on it. I finally got Siri to recognize my voice, but the Bluetooth in the car is still, you know, struggling.
You know, it is getting better. It's a tough road. You know, the original voice command functions were really cumbersome. You had to learn long strings of commands, and you ended up telling yourself, well, in the time I spent, you know, talking to this very reluctant computer, I could have, like, reached out and poked a button or two and gotten the same job done. But they're getting better. Cadillac has a new system, the Q. And just the other day, I just said an address out loud, and it got it first time, put it in the nav system, and I was on my way to my location without touching a single button.
Yeah, that's a Cadillac. They've scaled down the size of the car, but they've just blown out the tech part of it.
Absolutely, you know, and these auto companies, you know, technology is a battleground for them. Car companies, you know, quality reliability is on par in a lot of cases. There's still some variations, but in general, you know, there's no real lemons anymore. And so the battleground is in things like design and technology and features, just as it is with smartphones, you know, and the beauty and the elegance of the interfaces, which is, of course, why you see the iPhone doing so well. What have they done? What has Mac done to separate themselves? It's not really the features so much. It's the design and the way the features operate.
Yeah, you know, but how fast can car companies really keep up with the technology? Yeah, I have this program every week, and it's every 3 to 4 months something's changing, and certainly every year at the very least. Car companies don't tend to change things up that fast that often.
And they can't. You know, it takes 5-6 years to design a car from beginning to end. So buy it, and you're going to keep that car for 10 or 11 years, not like the way you know trade your smartphone in the second the battery mm-hmm. dies or the screen breaks. So by its nature, the technology in the car has had to last a lot longer. So it's not about them adopting every last feature as quickly. But one of the quantum leaps they're making and interest we're seeing is instead of embedded systems, instead of the nav system that sits there on your screen, the idea of running it with your smartphone via Bluetooth. Chevy has a new system, MyLink, and it's on their most affordable car, this tiny, tiny city car called the Spark. This is a $12,000-$13,000 car, and the idea is you just have a dumb screen, just a static screen in your car that you know broadcasts everything, and you connect your iPhone or your smartphone. Now your navigation system, it's already residing on your smartphone. just beam it into the car. And I used it a few weeks ago. Worked pretty well. So you've got nav on your phone, you've got Pandora radio, you've got all your music on your phone. It makes the system a lot less cost as well, instead of having to have a very expensive in-car navigation system that we all know costs, you know, tend to cost $1,000 and more. Now all I need is a smartphone, and now those apps can be updated as easily as I download an app onto my phone. So now you've got a car that can keep up with the latest advances.
So it is like just a moving computer screen.
Absolutely. It's just a simple screen, and you plug in either through the USB port or via Bluetooth. And now, again, every app I've got, I can run on my car without having. And then, again, this is on the lowest cost car in their lineup, you know, not a $30,000 or $40,000 luxury car. So here we have a $12,000 car that might have a technological edge over a $100,000 car.
All sorts of, you know, minor modifications like that, the USB port, those have to be absolutely stock at this point, right?
They're just about there, as you mentioned. You know, the car is keeping up. It was years before. Why don't cars have, you know, a CD player? And it was because of the slow pace of that technology. And then once they were on board, the car makers are loath to switch to a new system. If it doesn't take off, if it doesn't catch on, you've got the equivalent of an 8-track player in your car.
Well, I was sort of surprised with my 2012 that there is a CD player in the car, because it's not something I'm going to necessarily use that much.
The Spark was one of the first. The Spark has no CD slot. And then talk about something that made me feel old, you know. no CD whatsoever. So there's a sign of the times, definitely.
So basically the car companies, and they're sort of ceding a lot of this to the smartphone manufacturers and that are expert in turning these things around, leaving it blank. But the Cadillac you mentioned is not necessarily one of those. Its feedback screen sounds really interesting. It operates like a touch screen on a smartphone.
It does. You swipe it and you pinch it, you know, just like you do with an iPhone. You know, like any first-time system, it's a bit of a work in progress. It's got the haptic feedback. You know, it pushes against your finger to let you know that you've hit the right spot. And as your finger approaches, new information comes up on the screen and is trying to predict what kind of functions you'll be needing next. On the road, unfortunately, you know, you still got a car that you need to keep your eyes on the road. And one of the knocks on the Q system and systems like it, it's not the only one, is it requires a little too much eyes off the road, you know, to operate that. You know, when you're staring at your iPhone screen, you're looking at that little sucker pretty intently. But when you've got a car, you know, you want to kind of minimize, of course, the time that you need to take your eyes off the road.
A lot of stuff on the steering wheel now because of that.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what's driving the steering wheel controls and the voice controls, the idea of, you know, let's keep this person's eyes up, looking down the road, doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Cadillac,
which is not playing Angry Birds.
Right. Although, you know, someone's going to do it.
No doubt about it. Again, when you've got these embedded functions, you know, you've already got the ability to stream video to your front seat screen. And one way to avoid that system, Mercedes has a screen that has a divided view. As the driver looks at it, it's showing, say, the nav system, the climate controls, the audio controls. The person in the passenger seat is looking at that screen, seeing an entirely different view on the same screen, looking at a movie, looking at entertainment, and it all depends on your angle to the screen. So that's been Mercedes' approach to that.
Rod in Columbus, you're on the air with Lawrence Ulrich. Welcome to the show.
Yes, good morning. I was wondering a couple things with the cars that can drive themselves. First of all, will they be able to recognize hazards, you know, such as objects in the road, you know, say like another automobile or a bicycle or a pedestrian? And also, will they take into account weather conditions? And I was wondering, you know, with the cars driving themselves, if they'll be pushing for higher speed limits.
That's an interesting question. Thanks, Rod. So what about that? You know, we do know that the Cadillacs using seat vibrators to keep drivers on the straight and narrow, keep them from swerving off the road. They can monitor that. Can they do the same thing with road hazards?
Oh, absolutely. That's the very big basis of how these systems work. And I think most people would be surprised. What we have called adaptive cruise control is already a feature on a pretty common feature on luxury cars. It's using laser or radar to beam the road in front of it, and that's how it's working. That's how it's maintaining a set distance from the car in front of it. So I can jump in one of these cars today. I can drive these cars. I can say I set this cruise control on 80 miles an hour. I can now go into the city and drive this car and stop and go traffic and never hit the gas and never hit the brake. The car completely manages its own speed, braking, slowing down, doing it quite smoothly. When traffic stops, the car stops. When traffic starts again, the car starts up again. And as soon as there's an open spot in traffic, it zooms itself back up to 80 miles an hour and manages its own speed. And that's by judging the distance and the speed and doing that calculation in real time. That's a very common car, and that's the basis of these smart cars that are going to be able to drive themselves. Volvo has a system that has actual pedestrian detection. It's not just looking for the presence of an object. It's comparing it to an onboard database in the vehicle that has thousands of images of what humans look like when they're walking, taken from all over the world, all different body types. It's not only realizing that there's an object there, it's identifying it as a human being. And the car will brake itself to a halt from about 35 miles an hour, say in city traffic, in those really dangerous, you know, city pedestrian situations. We've tested it with dummies. You know, I can never get my friends to stand in front of the car and try it. But we've tested it with dummies, and the system works like a charm. The car will use almost full braking and brake itself to a halt before it hits that dummy. And those kind of systems are the beginnings of smart cars. But again, we're many, many years away from cars that can do that reliably in public situations. You know, California signed a law, in theory, allowing the use of driverless cars. But one of the first things you're going to see is maybe it'll take like a dedicated lane. You'll have kind of that convoy lane where cars can drive like in a kind of a train formation. And cars that are on that system, say in the way we have a high occupancy vehicle lane today, mm-hmm. you'll get these cars that can drive in tandem. Again, that's a very, very short leap from what we've already got today. And the car, so instead of being stuck in that springboard, you know, stop and go traffic, we'll have a lane where everyone's going 60 or 70 miles an hour, and an automated lane to allow that kind of driving. But we've already got. I've tested cars myself that can drive themselves and find an empty parking spot and park themselves, pull out, come back, and then fetch their driver. It's pretty amazing stuff on the horizon.
What about powering up all of this? Cars are becoming more and more efficient all the time when it comes to gas mileage, but is it going to affect the gas mileage in the long run?
No, the electronics take surprising little draw on power. So that's something that can easily be powered by the car battery, compared to much bigger loads like your running your air conditioning compressor and those kind of things. But definitely on the high, as you mentioned, fuel economy always a big factor. Mm-hmm. And again, everyone's trying to find that magic formula of like what kind of technology can we put on cars to boost mileage, but at a cost that consumers are actually willing to pay.
I can sit and look at what my gas mileage is like, which is kind of a bummer when I can't do anything about it now. But other than that, there's not much I can do.
Right, definitely. And of course, we see the cars that have, the kind of the systems that coach you to better mileage, the Fords and everything else.
Yeah, they have the little gauge in there, and it shows you the plus and minus.
The little green leaves that sprout on your screen.
Oh, I haven't seen those.
And the more leaves you get, the more efficiently you're driving.
Well, maybe for another conversation another time. Today, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Lawrence Ulrich, he's an auto critic for the New York Times and a contributor to Popular Science magazine, among others. And coming up, we're going to talk about shopping online, do's and don'ts, and some of the best options there are out there these days. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
When it comes to campaigns, going after voters is not just about policies or race or gender. Oh, no.
They're going to be trying to find as many Corvette owners as they can if it turns out that that's a profile of somebody who's an independent voter in Ohio.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Political targeting gets really specific. Big game hunters, I'm looking right at you. That's next time on Marketplace from APM.
Marketplace tonight at 6 on 89.7 NPR News. It's 69 degrees, warming up to a high of 78 today. Clouds with a slight chance of rain tonight, a low of 58 degrees. Sunshine and a high of 78, again for Wednesday. Support for 89.7 comes from Ohio State's Wexner Medical Center, announcing the opening of the Spirit of Women Park, thanks to the generous support of the Ingram family. Located near the Wexner Medical Center, the Spirit of Women Park features thousands of tiles hand-painted by donors to honor special women in their lives. medicalcenter.osu.edu. And support for 89.7 comes from Green Bean Delivery, offering home delivery of fresh organic produce and natural groceries, striving to make healthy eating more accessible to the communities of Greater Columbus. Details on Green Bean Delivery products, as well as how to place an order, can be found online at greenbeandelivery.com. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Some people never leave the screen of their iPad or PC to do their holiday shopping these days, but as the online shopping tradition grows, so do the good and bad options. Just like the mall, some shopping experiences online are better than others. Joining us now to talk about the best online retailers and how to know the difference is Donato Vaccaro, Associate Director and Survey Research Manager for Consumer Reports. Welcome to the show, Donato.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Anne.
So, ordering online, it's been going on for a long time now. What were the criteria you used to make judgments about the best online shopping experiences?
Well, let me just tell you that in general, Consumer Reports has been surveying Consumer Reports readers about their online retail experiences since people were buying online. And we've sort of honed in on specific things that we know are important to customers when they're buying online. And some of the main things that we focus on are the value, the quality of the merchandise they purchased, the navigation of the website, and what checkout was like. We also ask about shipping and, of course, customer support. When you have a problem, what happens?
Now, when in your survey of 28,000 of your subscribers about their experiences, online florists rated near the bottom, and I guess I was surprised by that, and I have to wonder, have I been sending out crappy flowers all these years?
Well, you know, what's interesting about this survey, Anne, is that we've been surveying people about online retailing for a long time. Typically, what we've done was we've done the survey for a specific category. For example, we'll ask people about electronics purchases, and then we'll have a story or with a ratings chart about buying electronics. In this case, this was the first time that we sort of looked at all the biggest retail websites that are out there, and we were actually surprised to see flowers at the bottom ourselves. But the main thing about the flower websites, and that includes FTD, 1-800-Flowers, and ProFlowers, mm-hmm. they tended to be toward the bottom of our ratings chart. Because of problems with shipping and when they had a problem with customer support, especially at Ticketmaster. People just didn't feel they got a good value when they purchased flowers compared to the others. One thing we should talk about in the very beginning of this whole discussion is that overall, people are very satisfied about online retailing. And we ask people to tell us about their experiences with cell phone service, with customer support when they buy a computer, the tech support that is, and some things that you ask people about will get low ratings. So we ask people about retail, we tend to get high ratings generally.
Tell me about Ticketmaster. What was the problem with that besides the fees?
Well, as far as all the things that we measured, Ticketmaster got lower marks than others. They didn't do well in terms of customer support, shipping, or checkout. And also they got a black eye for value. They tended to get our lowest mark for all the things that we measured, except for quality. For quality, they were average in terms of their mark.
In terms of what you ended up getting in the long run.
Yes.
Have you seen any online retail sites improve over time that you would remark on?
That's an interesting question. I would say we typically don't look at that. I mean, things change so much, mm-hmm. but we tend to not. You know, our surveys are done cross-sectionally. They're done at one point in time, and we tend to not because there's different context for our surveys. Not look
right.
at 1 year to, from years to the next.
And what about sites that have actual physical stores out there, like Walmart or Nordstrom, that sort of thing? Do they compare with the service that they offer in their stores?
In this survey, we didn't do that, but we have done that, and I can tell you that in general, that is true. That the overall satisfaction that you find for these retailers online pretty much matches up with what's happening in the walk-in experience.
Okay, so let's go over some of the highest-rated sites. B&H Photo, what do they do, and why are they so great?
Well, B&H Photo is they sell a whole range of photo and video products, electronic products
okay.
that you could imagine. They were at the top of our chart. They weren't different than some other retailers, in terms of their statistically in terms of their overall satisfaction, but they stood out because across the board they were pleasing their customers. They got the top mark for quality. The navigation of their website got high marks, and when people purchased things there, their checkout experience was very good. Overall, they got high marks for shipping and customer support. So when people had a problem there, people told us that it was successfully resolved.
Sometimes with checkout, it seems to take forever. You're going through all these different phases, and I can't figure out whether gift wrapping and shipping is going to be free until I get to the very end. It's irritating.
Yeah, that was one of our that's one of the complaints. It's probably one of the top complaints that people had. And I think in total, only about 6% of people complained about not knowing the full cost. But when you talk about the flowers mm-hmm. sites like ProFlowers, FTD, and 1-800, as much as 1 in 5 readers there complained about not knowing the full cost until they got to checkout.
And then it's just such a hassle because you've worked so hard to get there. They've got you.
Yeah, you have to go through the sign-in page.
Right.
There's all these things that you have to do just to get there to find it. And it's pretty clear that online retailers could do a better job with that.
Zappos, which I know of from shoes, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've gone to their site.
They started out in shoes, but they've really, they do clothes now and everything and other things as well.
I've gone to their site a couple times to look at their shoes because, from something I clicked on from Facebook or something, and they're just on me all the time now. They're avid. They must do well just because of their persistence, but why are they so great with customers?
Well, they were I'm looking at the chart now. Yeah, they were the only ones that got our top marks for both checkout, shipping, and for all three, customer support. So actually, I can speak about this, and we've done a few years back, we did Zappos, when we asked people about clothing purchases and shoe purchases, and they stood out like way above the pack in terms of clothing and shoe retailing. And they are known especially for their customer support. And when you have a problem, they have these policies, you can return anything if it doesn't work out for you.
Yeah, I would imagine the issue of returns is a pretty big one for people who use online retail.
It is. I mean, Zappos, again, as I said, they stand out for it. And I'm noticing in our article, we had pointed out that you have 365 days to send back any item. I mean, that's pretty generous. It pays for return shipping, too. I think, if you add it all up, I mean, Zappos is just really pleasing customers, for that especially more than anything. People know that. They feel confident they could buy something, and then if there's a problem, they have plenty of time to return it, and they'll get the refund on their shipping.
My guest
If you're just joining us, you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm talking with Donato Vaccaro, Associate Director and Survey Research Manager for Consumer Reports, about the best online shopping websites. If you have a suggestion, you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Costco is online. I guess I know that from getting the coupon packet in the mail every month, but I've never used it before. What makes Costco so great?
Well, it's funny because I think people who, you know, either don't get our magazine or even people who read our magazine regularly are surprised, I think, when they see Costco stand out like this in terms of online retailing, because Consumer Reports readers have known for some time now that as far as a walk-in store, Costco is one of our higher rated retailers. People, you know they're going to get good quality and a decent value. They tend to be limited on selection when you go into walk-in retailers, but the price is always, you know, they get high marks for price.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, with online retailing, Costco has successfully, you know, offered a decent selection, but they also have, you know, continued to get high marks for value, quality, navigation, checkout, shipping. Across the board, they got high marks. They were one of the few retailers in our survey that got, you know, they stood out for high marks across the board on each aspect that we asked about.
And it's interesting, the juxtaposition of Costco and Nordstrom, you know, the creme de la creme in some people's books. For service.
Yes.
And
yes,
you know,
exactly.
It is interesting. Costco gets has gotten high marks as a retailer, on-site retailer. Nordstrom does, too. It's top of the line.
It's true. One thing that does differentiate them, of course, is that people gave higher marks for Nordstrom in terms of quality. And I think that's sort of understood. I mean, people mm-hmm. know that when you go to Nordstrom's, you're getting top of the line merchandise. And Costco, you know, they get high marks for quality too, but they're just sort of like one mark different.
Right. Getting what you pay for.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hear you.
Go ahead.
I was going to say Costco also has a higher mark for value too. People know that when they go to Costco. They're getting decent merchandise and they regard it as a good value.
How typical is free shipping nowadays?
That's a good question. Free shipping is, you know, there's different places that you can find free shipping. Of course, it often depends on whether or not you make, you know, purchase a certain amount. You pay a certain amount of money. Everyone knows that in Amazon, you get free shipping after you pay a certain amount.
Okay.
But it's kind of across, it's all over the map, I mean, in terms of what happens at a given website.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also tweet us at All Sides WOSU. WOSU All Sides, I'm sorry, at WOSU All Sides. If you want, we have a tweet from James. He writes, I bought a Halloween costume, then saw a 20% off coupon code. I'd like to know the best way to find the codes. That's a good question. I've seen those before, too. When they say there's a code, like, do you have a coupon code, where would you go to find one if you wanted to try to get a discount online?
Well, we don't have advice on that from this specific story, but I can mm-hmm. just tell you in general that, you know, it always makes sense to use Google when you're looking for a coupon. I mean, if you Google the name of the retailer and coupon, you know, chances are it's going to take you to something that you need. And again, each retailer is different in terms of their coupon policy.
L.L. Bean, which, of course, has been in the catalog business forever, has made the transition to online pretty well, too. It's in your list.
That's right. They've been on – people don't know this. They've been online for a while. I mean, they've got themselves online earlier than a lot of others. And they've – when we did our clothing and shoes survey some years ago, they fared well in that as well, like Zappos. And they again, they're similar because they offer high-quality merchandise. Our readers gave them a very high rating for quality and also for customer support. L.L. Bean has a very generous refund policy.
Hmm. Gordon in Cleveland, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Gordon.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I wanted to know about what way, without being a computer geek or Visa and so forth, aside from exposing your credit information and bank account, some of the They want a bank account number for pay. How can you pay for anything online or through online shopping without exposing yourself? Is there some account you can set up, or you have to buy a Green Dot card or what for that purchase amount?
So how do you, how did you talk about or ask about privacy? And
we did cover that. You know, it's funny because Zappos was at the top of our chart, and one of the journalists, you know, spent a lot of time at these different sites, and one thing that was noticed was that with Zappos, you know, they earned high marks for checkout overall, but they, when you're clicking on checkout there, you have to go to a sign-in page, and there's no option to like buy something as a guest. You have to actually sign in and give in all that information, and some people find that frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
There's different ways. There are just different retailers offer different options for paying. But in general, you're expected to have either if you don't have a Visa card, you know, just some kind of PayPal mechanism to get your money there. If you're not comfortable with that, one of the strategies you can always use, of course, is you can go online, look at everything that's there, shop for something that you need, and of course, online has a much wider selection than if you go into a walk-in store.
Mm-hmm.
But if you might ultimately end up buying on the phone.
Yeah,
like a lot of these places they'll have an 800 number, so you can look at everything that's offered online, and then ultimately order on the phone if you're not comfortable with punching in your numbers for your credit card online.
Thanks, Gordon, for your call. We appreciate it. Joseph in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Joseph.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate your show and all that you guys do.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make a sort of a question and a comment, I guess. I use Amazon, and I have the app on both my iPhone and my iPad, and I started out just using it to buy textbooks for seminary, but then I found out that I could use it for everything else, and you're sort of always signed in, and with a one-click option, you can always buy. And it becomes almost a little too easy to purchase things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I've looked at my buy records over the last few months, I've realized I've really racked up a lot of purchases, but it's really got the convenience factor. And I wondered if other companies and other online shops are starting to utilize apps to be able to do that to where you stay signed in.
Yeah, I'll vouch for my Kindle, boy. It's just easy to just, wow, just whipping through Amazon and Kindle.
Absolutely.
Donato?
And we didn't even talk about all the user reviews on Amazon. They're the 600-pound gorilla as far as user reviews, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But Amazon was ahead of the rest. They're not like, we haven't talked about Amazon yet. They're not like one of the top five of our chart, but they had high ratings, of course. They've always enjoyed high ratings from our readers when we ask about electronics or appliances, and for this survey as well. But a lot of retailers are competing right now to be on mobile, to be making themselves accessible in for the iPad, et cetera. So there's a lot of gaming going on as far as that's concerned. Some people are, some retailers are more successful at getting themselves out there and marketing themselves to the customer.
Hmm. Okay, Joseph, watch that spending.
I will. Thank you so much.
All right, take care. In the article in November, in October, on Best Online Shopping Websites and Consumer Reports, it said getting a ton of spam can be a problem, and Consumer Reports recommends setting up a separate email address for online purchases.
That's right. Some people, you know, again, are very concerned about privacy, and it's, part of it's a privacy thing, but also some of it's just a sort of a being organized and managing your email. And it certainly makes sense to set up an email address for your personal life and then one separate for any commerce that you do. This way, it's easier for you to keep things organized.
All right. And a tweet from Sarah. She wants us to list off those top five websites again. Oh, I'll give you it's BH Photo, B&H Photo, Zappos, Costco, Nordstrom, L.L. Bean, Newegg for electronics, and REI, which carries outdoor gear and clothing. So
that's right. Those are the ones that are at the top of our chart.
Okay. Well, Donato Vaccaro, thanks for talking about it with us today. I appreciate it.
Sure, you bet. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Donato Vaccaro, Associate Director and Survey Research Manager for Consumer Reports. We've been talking about best online shopping websites. They wrote about that in the October 15 edition of Consumer Reports. We'll have a link for you to that at WOSU.org/allsides. Coming up, Russell Holly from our tech blogger from Geek.com. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News Team.
As school children and neighborhood residents watched, Columbus Mayor Michael Coleman smashed a large backhoe bucket into the foundation of Poindexter Tower on Mount Vernon Avenue.
This is a monument to misery in this community. And we're turning this misery into hope and the seed.
Hear the latest in local and national news on Morning Edition on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Stay right here. In just about 20 minutes, fresh air begins. And 70 degrees with partly sunny skies, warming up to 78 today. Clouds tonight with a slight chance of rain, a low of 58 degrees. More sunshine back up to 78 on Wednesday. Support for 89.7 comes from Columbus School for Girls, enrolling girls from preschool through grade 12. More information on CSG's academics, arts, athletics, and the all-girl learning environment at an upcoming admission open house, Sunday, November 4th from 1 to 3 p.m. and at columbusschoolforgirls.org. Support also comes from Ohio Northern University, hosting Discover ONU Day, Saturday, November 3rd, allowing families to learn about the blend of liberal arts and professional programs offered at ONU. Online registration and additional details at onu.edu. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
It seems like everyone's snapping pictures on their smartphones these days, but a new kind of camera may change that. The Lytro, and I hope I'm pronouncing that properly, is a tiny cubed shape camera that comes in several bright colors. What makes it special, though, is not what it looks like, but what it can do. Whether you're a photography flop and things come out blurry, or you're the artistic type who likes to experiment with foreground and focus, the Lytro allows you to fix mistakes or be creative. Here to tell us how it does that is Geek.com blogger and Tech Tuesday regular Russell Holly. Welcome back, Russell.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
So it's touted as, did I pronounce it correctly, Lytro?
Yes, Lytro is correct.
And it's touted as the first consumer camera that records the entire light field instead of a flat 3D image. What are they talking about?
So explaining how this works is a little complicated. Basically, it grabs exactly the way it sounds. It's just kind of hard to wrap your head around it. It takes, everything that it can see within a certain distance and kind of grabs all of it and stores it as, kind of a continuous photo that you can interact with once you've taken it. And by that, I mean, you can choose after the photo has been taken which point you want the image to be focused on. And you can change that as you move around. These aren't photos in the sense that you would print them out and add them to a scrapbook. These actually, the images themselves are only really accessible through, either Facebook or the Lytro website or on the camera itself, or on a computer when you've moved them. This is an entire, kind of digital experience when you're looking at these photos, and it's really a unique experience.
Is it because of the way it records the entire light field that it can't just print out on paper?
That's right. It's capturing so much more than, just a single thing. Now, you can take, once you have manipulated the photo, once you've chosen a focus point, you can turn that into a still image, and that can be printed. But you're not really going to print straight from the Lytro.
And do you tap a touch screen or something to manipulate
it? Yeah,
there's
a touch screen on the back. It's kind of a long box, and you've got the lens and kind of the internal hardware, and then you've got a simple, photo button and a very small screen in the back. And you pick one point on the photo that you're taking, and you pick another point. And it will record everything, in between those two points on the little screen on the back.
Is this something that you predict we will have on our smartphones someday or not?
It's really complicated technology right now. If we have it on our smartphones, it's going to be a while.
Okay.
This is stuff that it's very, very cool stuff, and somebody may find a way to do this in software, you know, kind of, you know, not the exact same thing, but something similar as time goes on. But right now, the technology that fits inside of this, they're $400 cameras. They're not exactly, you know, inexpensive point and shoots. And cramming that technology into a smartphone is definitely going to take a lot of time.
And it's not cheap. $400.
Yeah, $400 is definitely not expensive. Definitely not expensive compared to, you know, high end cameras.
Right.
But it's certainly much more expensive than, you know, the average point and shoot. This is really just something for people who, you know, kind of enjoy having fun taking photos and aren't really ready to spend the money on a you know, expensive professional camera.
So let's turn to something else. The big Android barbecue of 2012 just wrapped up in Texas. Were you there?
I was.
Okay. So did you eat any barbecue?
I did, in fact. there's a barbecue chef there. His name is Ray Walters. He's very talented. The event is kind of interesting because, you know, a lot of technology conferences that I go to, they focus very heavily on either products or developers. Very few of them focus on the people who purchase the products and enjoy the products. And the Android ecosystem has continued to, you know, just grow explosively over the last, you know, 2 years. You know, surpassing Apple and Microsoft in how many devices are sold on a daily basis. And this event is unique in that it caters to both, you know, developers of Android products, you know, applications and things like that, but it's users as well, people who are just kind of fans of the operating system and really just kind of like playing with their phone. They kind of all come together to this event.
How far do they? I mean, you travel because, you know, it's your business, but do just average users travel very far to do this?
There were users this year from as far as Romania. People come down from Canada. It's an interesting event.
And you say that with a straight face too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You wrote on your blog that it focused on sharing developer best practices from every corner of the Android ecosystem, from near field communication to the latest and greatest from the modder community.
So one of the interesting things about Android is that it's based in the Linux operating system, which is a history for being very highly customizable, even beyond what the original developers intended. And Android is no different. There are people who can take Android phones and turn them into full computer servers, you know, that are capable of hosting entire websites. And that's just kind of one small thing that gets done. And that's a group of, you know, people that come to these events. They focus on that kind of thing.
So did you learn anything new here?
I learned a little bit about the history of near field communication from a wireless specialist named Pearl Chen. She gave a presentation on near field communication, which is something that I'm very passionate about. And it was interesting that she gave kind of an extended history of how, you know, this kind of wirelessly enabled technology was originally used in you know, spy microphones and things like that. It was really kind of cool.
What else? What is the modder community? I mean, is that just what you were talking about?
Right. Yeah. Anybody who takes these Android devices, and, you know, we joke around and we say that we have these tiny computers in our pockets. So these people are capable of making them, you know, truly computers in our pocket.
614-292-8513 is the number to call if you have a question or comment for Russell Holly. It doesn't necessarily have to be about what we're talking about, because it's been almost a year now, Russell. Did you realize that?
I know.
Isn't that weird? But I think you've only been stumped once in a year.
That's right.
Called. So if you want to stump Russell Holly, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can tweet us at WOSU All Sides, post your question or comment on Facebook, for that matter, if you want to. Once again, 614-292-8513. What else at Big Android Barbecue?
I'm looking here.
So Sony is a manufacturer of a lot of different things. They make, you know, kind of smart televisions and phones and things like that. And one of the things that they were really showing off at the event this year was a smart watch that's connected to your phone, and its job was specifically to run applications that would, you know, just kind of act as a companion for your phone. So if you were, you know, driving and you were using your phone for a turn-by-turn navigation, instead of reaching down and grabbing your phone or having your phone mounted in the window somewhere, you would just glance down at your watch and it would give you the next set of instructions. And that was something that was, you know, really heavily talked about at the event this year.
Okay, so like, what's the next big thing for Android? Did they talk about that?
It's an interesting, you know, thing because Google is going to be hosting an event next Monday, actually, where they're going to be talking about exactly that. So,
okay,
it was just kind of a, you know, enjoying everything that's leading up to that.
Okay, so I guess we'll talk about that next Tuesday.
We will.
Okay, hang on. We got a call from Scott in Columbus. Hi, Scott. You're on the air with Russell Holly. Welcome.
Holly, greetings. My question is I'm seeing how close are we to taking our cell phones and making our like main computer? I've seen samples of people using kind of Linux, and then you just everything's on the phone. You just carry it around and hook it up to displays and keyboards.
That's definitely something that's around now for certain handsets. And there's Canonical, the company that makes the Linux distribution called Ubuntu. They have been working for a little while on exactly that, where you can take you would be able to take a phone and connect it to a screen with a mouse and keyboard, and when it displays on the screen, instead of showing the phone interface, it would be, you know, a whole computer. And Motorola tried something like that in the past. It's not a bad thought, but it really kind of creates quite a learning curve, you know, when you have to shift in between those interfaces. So I think that it will become more popular when one of these companies, you know, be it, you know, Apple, Google, or Microsoft, figure out how to do exactly that without, you know, without completely changing the user experience in the process.
Yeah, I was thinking that Windows 8 should be doing that. If they want to, you know, Microsoft hasn't done well in the cell phone market and, the, you know, smartphones, they should have built that in. And suddenly they, you know, you just move between your computer and your cell phone and they're all the same thing.
Well, visually, Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 are very, very similar, so it would not surprise me at all if that's something we see from Microsoft in the not-so-distant future.
Hey, Scott. Bye. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Charles in Delaware, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Charles.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm driving. I'm going to give you a quick question and take the answer off the air.
Okay.
I'm interested in when, if it's going to happen, that you will be able to use your computer to hook into programs like the Tennis Channel or the Soccer Network without going through the cable companies, either the, you know, dish type or the ground ones, and you know, skip the 100 channels that you never want to watch and just pay for the stuff that you want to watch. And I'll take the answer off the air.
All right, Charles, thanks.
So what's really interesting is that there are parts of there are parts of the world where that kind of thing is possible. There are phones that get released with these big antennas that are tucked inside, and you can pull them out and you receive television from the air, and you can watch it on your phone. It's a service called No TV in Japan. It's really popular for doing exactly that. It's a licensing game. You know, the television you know, providers, the people who are providing the service, the, you know, the cable companies and the satellite companies. You know, they have deals with a lot of these organizations, and even now you use a service like HBO Go. In order to use HBO Go on your computer or on a Roku box or something like that, you have to feed it, you know, who your subscriber information is. You know, be it Verizon or Comcast or something like that. So you know, when will that happen? The easiest answer is when the people providing the service allow it. There's definitely no technical reason.
Well, when they can figure out a way to make money by doing it.
Very true.
We have a tweet from a listener. They ask, isn't the big tech thing today from Apple with the iPad mini? Why aren't you talking about that? There's a really good reason, isn't there?
There is a very good reason. It happens in about an hour. Apple has actually already pulled their store down, and there's just nothing to say yet. They haven't announced anything. What we're expecting is that it will be a new, smaller iPad that will come at a much cheaper price point than the existing iPad. We're hoping for something around $250 or $300. Right now, I think everyone's just kind of waiting for Mr. Tim Cook to take to the stage and tell everyone what's coming.
We wait with bated breath. Carl in New Albany, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Carl.
Hi. I wanted to find out if at the conference they addressed Stellar Wind, the NSA's initiative to capture and aggregate all data from phones, computers, everything that is going on in the world, and access that indefinitely.
So Stellar Wind is
Stellar Wind is a program that was begun by the NSA. It's been profiled in the New York Times by its creator, where in theory every bit of electronic data that is being broadcast or disseminated, whether from smartphone, computer, whatever source, anywhere in the world, is being captured in the substation built in Utah. Hmm. And this is sounds X-Filian.
Creepy.
But it is, it is out there. It has been discussed, and it is profiled in all the major news. That it goes as far to say that even some of the new smartphones can even capture the data of conversations while they're off.
Oh, well, I mean, that is definitely true, but that doesn't have anything to do with Stellar Wind. It's the problem with that product is that, yes, it has been discussed, and yes, it is definitely believable, and yes, they're are more than enough reasons to point and say this guy was telling the truth. But unfortunately, people who, security professionals who spend a lot of time tracking packets and analyzing those kind of things have yet to be able to trace it back to its source in any kind of meaningful way. So, but I think that's a fairly advanced topic for Ann's audience.
Oh, well, you know, who knows? You know, Carl knew about it. Thanks, Carl,
Absolutely.
For your call. I'm going to move quickly to Jim in Westerville. Hi, Jim. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. My question is this. I shoot a digital video in the field, and when the card is full, I need to dump that onto a hard drive. I'm wondering, what is the cheapest, most portable option I could dump that onto, obviously, other than a desktop or a laptop? Is there some other alternative?
Well, there are two alternatives, really. There are wireless cards. They add the wireless functionality to your camera so that you can actually after you've taken the photo, it uploads wirelessly to another service, and those are called iFi, EYEFI. And another alternative, there are hard drives that just kind of act as a slave drive that can receive. Right now, I think it's only SD cards. If you're using something like Compact Flash or Sony's proprietary one, then it may not be as effective. But with SD cards, it does exactly that, where you pop the card in, it pushes everything over to the larger drive. I think those I can't remember the name of the manufacturer off the top of my head, but I think those started around $350.
Okay, Jim.
Thanks very much.
Yeah,
appreciate
thank
it.
You. Take care. If anybody wants to read Russell Holly's blogs, they can at geek.com. Russell Holly, thanks for joining us. I'll talk to you about that iPad mini next week.
Absolutely. Talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks to the All Sides staff, associate producer Amy Jurevich, assistant producer Corinne Gleckler, production assistants Katie Higgins and Leticia Wiggins, and Rose Joe, and also video production by Rich and Amber Karsmitsky. Thanks so much for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org. This is WOSU 89.7 NPR News.